following is a presentation of the Chicago Bears Network. On the air, online, and on demand. Visit the Chicago Bears Network page on chicagobears.com. And now, welcome to Bears All Access, your all-access pass into Chicago Bears football. Bears All Access is brought to you by Sports Authority and sponsored by University of Phoenix, Tempur-Pedic, and Comcast.
Welcome, everybody, to Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority. I'm Jim Miller, filling in for the very busy man, Zach Zaidman, out tonight. But, of course, my co-host, Tom Thayer, he's here with me. Just two offensive guys. We will try to balance out all the defensive talk. Tonight, we're going to wrap up the season after watching the Super Bowl last Sunday and look ahead to what the Chicago Bears will be concentrating on now leading up to free agency and the draft. We'll be taking your phone calls right here at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet questions to us using the hashtag CBNetwork. So right now, let's welcome in my co-host. Say hello to one Tom Thayer. How are we doing today, Tom?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's so good to hear from you. Nice getting a chance to talk to you on an open mic format, because a lot of time when we're talking, it's either at training camp during the season or on a shorter, you know, a shorter leash. And it's going to be great because I got a lot on my mind, both about the Super Bowl, about the upcoming offseason, about the depth of the draft. So I'm really, you know, looking forward to spending some time with you.
It's going to be awesome, bud. It really is a pleasure being here with you. And you're right, before we move on to the business season, because the NFL already transitioned to the business season now that Super Bowl 48 has wrapped up, let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. A lot of talk about the comparison, Seattle Seahawks defense, how it compares to the 85 Bears defense. And a lot of people are thinking, hey, is this the new model? When you look at the Seattle Seahawks, I don't know. I mean, you've been on teams where defense has been that dominating.
You know, it's funny, though, when they say, is this the new model? It's the new model if you get those pieces, if you go out there and everything is there. It's because everybody said, oh, is the 46 the next coming of the defense? Is this the way that personnel change is going to go? No, if you don't have the personnel to play the defense as well as you did against a guy back when the Bears played it or updated to the way the Seattle Seahawks did it, that's not the formula for success. Go out there and have a general manager and a staff that brings in those types of players, but then they have confidence when they draft players that are kind of out of the box that they make sure that they can go in and play at the level that's expected of them.
Well, absolutely. Like the 85 Bears just dominated. I don't think anybody saw it coming, how they would dominate a historical offense, putting up record numbers in terms of points, 606 points on the season for the Denver Broncos. They were averaging 38 points a game and absolutely just went out there and destroyed them. Seattle destroyed him. And what I mean by the model is, and you guys had him, Leslie Frazier wasn't a small corner, you know, at the end of the day, but everybody's looking at Seattle. Look at the size of the safeties. Look at the ranginess of the corners. They're tall, they're big, they're lean, they're rangy in that type of aspect. And you look at the pass rushers. Tom, when you, as a former offensive lineman, when you face a wave of pass rushers that are absolutely, they're probably 9 to 10 deep. When you look at the Seattle Seahawks, and then, of course, those speedy linebackers that allows them to flow to the football. And also look at the participants. They've hit on most of their draft picks when you look at the Seattle Seahawks, but then you look at the contributions of even seventh-round draft picks like Malcolm Smith, who was Super Bowl 48 MVP. I think a lot of people that you mentioned, maybe you can explain it to the listeners out there, that if it fits your philosophy, yeah, that may be the way you want to go, but it has to fit the scheme of what you're trying to deploy defensively, and will that be the Bears model?
Well, you know, I think the key word in there is the wave of personnel they can throw at you. When you have a guy as talented as Peyton Manning, if he's not guessing every single play of your front seven or eight and who's going to attack him, then Peyton Manning is going to destroy you. And the creativity with the personnel groupings that they can put up on the line of scrimmage, make sure every offensive lineman and every blocker that's involved in the scheme, whether you're a back, H-back, tight end, make sure they understand their assignment. And that's the key there, is I think there was uncertainty on the line of scrimmage of Denver. But again, Peyton Manning is a stationary, one-dimensional target. If he passes the ball 75 times a game, he's going to be in one spot every single time. And even if you collapse the pocket, he doesn't have the athleticism where he's going to break to his right or his left like Russell Wilson or like Aaron Rodgers and some of these guys that are more dangerous outside the pocket. So I do believe you know, when the Bears went and faced Steve Grogan and Tony Eason back in 85, they were also stationary targets on a very complex, aggressive rushing system. And that's what they were able to take care of. And I think Seattle went in with the same game plan. If we can put one iota in confusion of one of the eight or seven blockers, that's going to give them the advantage against Peyton Manning.
It's always interesting. As dominant as that Super Bowl 20 victory was for the Chicago Bears, and then you look at how dominating this performance was by the Seattle Seahawks, at least historically when we look at things, Tom, I mean that you can always at some point regain your footing, so to speak. I mean, it wasn't the cases in these two Super Bowls when you break it down. Normally, you can go to the, you know, as bad as a snap as it was to start the game, you normally shake it off and regain your footing, as I mentioned. It couldn't happen. I mean, that how they broke the spirit and broke the will of the Denver Broncos, it just never relented. Maybe just talk about that, because I don't think other than those two, and I'd probably put Baltimore in there because their defense is pretty darn good. I don't think we've ever seen a team be able to just get dismantled like what the Bears did to New England and like what the Seahawks did to the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, you know, their relentlessness was amazing, because I don't think there was one play defensively that was a breakdown in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, I mean, there may be a longer run attached to Marshawn Lynch, very seldomly, or maybe a longer pass over the middle, seldomly. But again, every stage of their game, they were 100% accurate on their pre-snap thinking. They were really well rehearsed during the weeks leading up to the game itself, and they played with a great deal of confidence. And you know, that's the key there. Is I think Denver is a team that always looked for Peyton Manning as their savior. Somehow he was going to save the day. He was going to make the right read, the right change, the right connection after the ball was snapped, and he was going to save Denver. It didn't happen, and Seattle was not going to allow them to even have any confidence from that first play on. And again, you know, Jim, I wanted to ask you later, is that first play of the game, don't you think they should have had an obvious, a 100% of the time we will run this against anything?
Yeah.
Just to be able to hear the snap count and then be able to make your changes.
They should have expected that it was going to be a home game for Seattle in terms of the crowd noise. Well, we've got plenty to talk about. I'm here with my man, Tom Thayer. This is Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority on 670 The Score and the Chicago Bears Network. Stick with us. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Bears All Access. You can hit the beach with five of your favorite Chicago Bears players, including Tim Jennings, this March in Cabo. Visit applevacations.com/bears for more information. And welcome back to Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority. I'm Jim Miller, filling in for Zach Zaidman alongside Tom Thayer. And before we went to the break, Tom, you asked me a very good question. You know, you think about that bad snap that really got the snowballing started for the Denver Broncos. And here you're in a field in the great Northeast, far different from Denver where they played. It's an independent environment, and you'd like to think with the crowd noise that Seattle, they travel well. That 12th man is no joke what they can do in the great Northwest. And here they're in an independent field, and the crowd noise is just overwhelming. And I think that's probably one part of the game plan that Denver didn't anticipate, because I didn't think that they would have thought that crowd noise would be a problem. They thought it'd be 50-50 in terms of the crowd noise, and then here the first play of the game, rather than being a go play where you just line up and run it, here you have Peyton Manning checking or audibling at the line of scrimmage. Lo and behold, a safety to start the game, a record 12-second score in Super Bowl 48. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think the game planning, that was something that was overlooked by the Denver Broncos coaching staff.
I got a quarterback question for you. Do you think Peyton Manning goes into a game with 15, 10, 20 players scripted, or is his changes so frequent that they really don't have a script like you do other, you know, stationary, or not stationary coaches, but coaches that have more of a consistency in their game plan?
No, I agree with you. I think Peyton Manning is one of those guys, and I've said this all the time, he's elevated the position of quarterback like no other, because literally the whole playbook is at your fingertips at the line of scrimmage. And I think they give him free rein. I think they give him the ability, no matter where they're at any point in the game, to look at a defense, survey the lay of the land, and have the opportunity to put the offense in the best play to take advantage of the defense, because he's done it his whole career. He really has. And I think from the Denver Broncos side of it, crowd noise really didn't factor into it. I mean, we're talking about a record-level-setting offense, the things that they accomplished in the 2013 season, and I thought they'd just be, hey, been there, done that. It's not going to be an issue, but it was an issue for the Denver Broncos that got that snowballing effect started, as I mentioned.
You know, I think when you don't have a script, I think it's kind of a hindrance to some of your players, because if you don't have great health on your offense and you have maybe one to two interchangeable players, and then Peyton Manning doesn't give you a script where you can go down there and study your assignments for the most part to get your second win going into the game. When you have to go in there and every play is a possibility, every single snap, depending upon what type of stance that you started the play in, it's got to be difficult and challenging, and especially amplified the magnitude of the game that these guys were getting ready for. Just that opening moment really surprised me more than anything else Peyton Manning did in the game. The interception when he was getting hit, every quarterback does it. Just that initial thought process really, you know, challenged me for that game.
Well, I don't care who you are and how many Super Bowls you've played in. Obviously, you've experienced it. I've experienced it. I never had the ability to play in one, but I was jacked up just being on the sidelines. I mean, and here, even Peyton Manning, you're going to have a certain, your adrenaline's going. And normally in those situations, when you're dealing with crowd noise and you're trying to, as you know, as an offensive lineman, for us, the code word was, I would progressively get louder. If I know I'm going to audible and it happens to be on the first play of the game, it'd be like, easy, 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 black 88, and then I can audible into what? But you progressively bring up your voice to where those guys recognize it up front on the offensive line, and now I can audible my play. I just think at that point in time, everybody's adrenaline's going, including the center for the Denver Broncos, just wasn't handled. I think everybody was just a little bit overhyped, so to speak, in going to a Super Bowl. Maybe talk about your experiences.
You know, one of my thought processes continue about Peyton Manning is there's so much talk about the Omaha call. To me, that's kind of a snap indicator for the defensive line, because there is a consistency when Peyton Manning's going to snap the ball after his Omaha call. And then there was so much talked about it. Nowadays, with the way the parabolic mics cover the voice of the quarterbacks, they take those tapes and they break them down specifically to understand and hear the tempo of a cadence and try to get involved in that. And that was one of the things that almost was too much was made out of, because it was an indicator to me for the defensive line to be ready after the double Omaha call.
Yeah, it's a good point. I played when I was in New England. We used the Omaha call, and it just all Omaha was a code word for the next thing I say, it's going to be on first sound.
Right.
So if I say, hey, even if I'm audibly, I see the play clock's winding down as a quarterback. All right, easy, easy, guys. We're going to go black 39. I'm calling a run play. Black 39, Omaha, blue go. All it is an indicator. The next thing I say is on the quick. So any words you hear, we're all going. Now, like New England, they use Omega is what they're using. It's just a new version of Omaha is all it is. And you're right. It gives the defense the opportunity to jump on that snap count at the end of the day. And I think Seattle had a great game plan, because they know Peyton Manning is always audibly and doing everything. They're not going to show their hand defensively. They know he's going to go down and take that play clock down within 10 seconds. Now they're going to line up in defense, in their defense that they're going to run. And by then, he's already made his audible at the end of the day, and that's the catch-22. Peyton Manning found himself in Super Bowl 48.
Right. He sure was on the defensive, Jim, and I was surprised to see Peyton Manning like that. But then again, I think with a defense like that that has no fear, that's exactly the way they played.
Well, from your standpoint as an offensive lineman, there's nothing wrong with go plays to set the tone to start a Super Bowl. That's all Seattle did. At the end of the day, look at that team, smash-mouth football, running the ball. They had a couple of the jet sweeps, the speed sweeps, still were running inside zone run with the bootleg naked. Those are all go and call plays. No audibles involved for Russell Wilson and the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, you got to, you know, every single team, you have to have a bread-and-butter play. If you don't have a play that you're 100% confident running against any single defense that you are getting ready to face – then obviously you do have, you know, you do have something wrong with your offense, because you have to have the ability to go out there and put players in a stance of strength so they come off the ball with confidence when they're trying to initially get that first wind out of them.
Well, we're back to the formula.
Yeah.
Good defense, don't turn over the football, run the football, dominant special teams. It's a pretty simple formula, Tom. You played a lot of football, and I have too. It's won a lot of games in the National Football League. Well, coming up next, want to get into the weather conditions. Can Chicago, can they host a Super Bowl? Hey, New York got it done, and New Jersey got it done, did a phenomenal job. Maybe Chicago's next on the ticket. So when we come back after this break, we'll play Ask Tom. So give us a call at 312-644-6767 to ask Tom a question. And the best question will get a gift certificate from Sports Authority. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority. I'm Jim Miller, filling in for Zach tonight alongside Tom Thayer. And it's time to take some phone calls. We call this segment Ask Tom. And tonight, the best question in this segment will get a Sports Authority gift certificate. And we will be the judges who will win. So let's get started. You can hop on board at 312-644-6767. And Tom, before we get to the phone calls that are going to be jacking up the phone lines there, I want to ask you about Super Bowl conditions. One, playing in the elements would be my first question. And the second question, you know, could Chicago host a Super Bowl? How do you feel about the cold weather Super Bowls that went miraculously in New Jersey and New York?
It sure did. You know, I think the aftermath, like the train stations before the aftermath of the travel on the way home with the snow conditions, that was the biggest sour note to the Super Bowl, that luckily they were able to get through the entire day and the weather wasn't crazy like it was in Chicago a couple times this season. But I do think if you're going to run a Super Bowl in Chicago, they're better I think the proximity of the stadium, according to where McCormick Place is, where the hotels are in the city of Chicago, because you have probably 60% of the hotels close enough to the stadium to house the fans that would come to the Super Bowl are either within walking distance, trolleys, buses, or the mass transit they have in our city. I think Chicago, although it's too small because of the seats that you need to house, I think they could put them in the stadium somehow. But I think if New York is able to host a Super Bowl, Chicago is more than capable of hosting a Super Bowl.
Hey, the shopping, obviously the shows, the restaurants, you mentioned the hotels, obviously all within proximity of the stadium as well. So we will open up the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Ask Tom, and you can win a Sports Authority gift certificate. Let's go out to Wayne, who's joining us on the show. What's going on, Wayne?
Hey, Wayne.
Hey, a couple of my favorite Bears. How's it going, guys?
Good. How you doing?
Appreciate it, guys. Hey, I want to know if you guys think like me. Peanut Tillman, everybody knows this. When he went down, how the takeaways and the pick sixes went out, and he just keeps an air of winning and taking the ball away. I think there should be a bigger push on getting him back on the team, maybe incentives, maybe he can get paid more down the line a few years from now or something, but there's ways to get him signed. Don't you think it's awful important to try and get Peanut signed?
I take it two ways. The enjoyment of watching Peanut throughout his career in Chicago, I love this guy as much as anybody. Then you have to be privy to the medical information to look at a player with his years of service. And if you want to make a realistic financial decision, and that's the information that I'm not privy to, so it's hard for me to say. But if Charles Tillman was 100%, he could attack the offseason like he has in the past, because he is one of the most pre-professional prepared athletes I've ever been around. And that's what I love about Peanut. So again, if his medical information is cleared, I'm all for Charles Tillman. But then again, you have to make a realistic decision about a cornerback at this stage of his career. How do you feel about that, Jim?
Yeah, no, you bring up good points. I did see Charles Tillman on Radio Row. He came on our Sirius XM NFL radio show. He says he's feeling good, and I think he fits the bill, much like the Seattle mold. He's a tall, rangy corner. I mean, who has guarded Calvin Johnson better in terms of,
right,
you know, one-on-one coverage and obviously his ability to punch out the football. And it may be a situation where Phil Emery, the general manager of the Bears, allows him to go shop his wares around the NFL. And then they say, hey, here's the realistic number we think where you could come back and be a part of the Chicago Bears. And that could be in place as well. But you're right. Older players with an injury history, you got to keep all those things into the mix. Thanks for the phone call, Wayne. Let's go out to Joe, who's joining us on the program. Joe.
Hey, Big Joe.
Hi, guys. How are you? Cheered for you many a times. Question for Tom. Tom, I know zone blocking is all the rage nowadays in the pros. I'm just curious to know, back when you played specifically under Ditka, was there that much zone blocking? For example, if you could, I mean, it's just as quickly as you can. Can you explain, maybe pick one play out of the vanilla chocolate strawberry type of plays that you guys used to run under Ditka? Can you maybe explain it to us as far as the rules for blocking from end to end?
Okay. You know, it's interesting. Nowadays they have a zone blocking where they'll take more of a lateral step and they'll allow the defensive lineman or the movement of the defense to dictate their next blocking assignment. And there is an aspect of zone blocking, even in our day, maybe outside runs that were outside the shoulder of the tackle or the tight end. But on the inside, I'm not a big fan of zone blocking. I don't want to see a lateral step when you're going to try to get movement forward. So our offensive line coach, Dick Stanfeld, who is a Hall of Fame caliber player in the league, and he was teaching us his craft and the way he did it. And ours was more of an aggressive straight ahead, and we use the snap count as a weapon. We knew that 8 games a year, because we were playing at home, the snap count was a weapon. 8 games a year on the road, you had to earn the snap count. So again, I believe that there's an aspect of zone blocking in the modern day football that you could use. But in my day, when you were running a play inside the shoulders of the tackles, it was a straight ahead attack, use the snap count as a weapon type play. So it is a difference in philosophy. Nowadays, it's more in a belief and let the defense start their motion and try to take advantage of them. You know, it's just a different philosophy in the years separating us.
Thanks for the
great
phone
question,
call,
though, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Joe. You can hop on board 312-644-6767 and ask Tom. And I remember we were back in Bears training camp, Tom, and you said, hey, I always love the man schemes more than the zone blocking schemes. Break that down for the listeners out there, why you preferred it as an offensive lineman compared to a lot of teams now have the mesh of both. But maybe give your insight on it.
You know, Jim, I did a study, and 74% of the time, the point of attack of a run play is from the inside shoulder of the right tackle to the inside shoulder to the left tackle. And to me, when you know the snap count, you have the ability to have the initial burst off the line of scrimmage where you can fundamentally fit into a defensive lineman before he reacts. And I am a believer that you approach the defensive lineman, you attack them before they initiate their movement. And again, it's the philosophy. It's a fundamental fact of teaching by Dick Stanfeld. And again, it was a man scheme in terms of movement, but there were combination blocks in the line of scrimmage that started with aggressive double teams, started a huge impact in the defense, and then you worked your way up to that second level. It was the first determination, block the line of scrimmage and then go to the second level and allow Walter Payton and Neil Anderson and the running backs to do what they do. Again, I'm old school in terms of what I think about offensive line blocking, but again, there is an aspect of zone that it's used in every era.
Let's try and sneak in another phone call. Marvin, you're up, my friend. Thanks for joining Bears All Access.
Hey, Marvin.
Hey, guys. Just heard your comments chimed in here. I heard you say about hosting a Super Bowl. There's no question about the city being able to accommodate. Naturally, we could. We're the third largest city, plenty of hotels. We've had conventions, presidential conventions, all kinds of big events. But today, driving around and New York dodged a bullet. I don't think the league would ever risk having a marquee matchup in the outdoors. Can you imagine? We're 3 days past the Super Bowl, and it's 4 degrees right now. That would be the most miserable experience for any fan who attended this.
Well, I think the trial and error that they were going to hope worked out for the best in New York, and luckily the game day, it did work out for them. I think really Chicago is a more convenient city to house that amount of people that are in just a closer proximity to the stadium. It isn't, you know, you have McCormick Place to house fans before and after the game, and again, everything's in walking distance. So, you know, Marvin, if they did it in New York, and because I've been to that stadium, I know how far it is to travel from the hotels to the stadium and everything else. It's much the difficulty in bringing it to New York, I think it would be harder than putting it in Chicago.
Well, you think of Indianapolis. Everything's in walking distance there. I know it's an enclosed stadium, a Lucas Oil Stadium, but you'd have the same access in Chicago, walking to and from the stadium,
right,
from hotels. So I think it would make a lot of sense. And the biggest thing is obviously the number of seats. You know, already, if you look around the National Football League, a lot of cold weather cities already starting to amp up their seating. Gillette Stadium's trying to do it because they're all going to put in a bid. And maybe something like that could happen in Chicago to amp up the stadium from a 62,000-seat stadium like Soldier Field.
You know, I got to say, personally, I'm a warm weather reward type of guy, even whether it's the bowl games in the college or back to the Super Bowls. It seemed like the warm weather conditions was always the reward for the effort and the hard work that you put in as a team. And it was also a reward to the family and friends and fans that traveled to that area to have more of a warm weather destination. And, you know, that's always, you know, seemed, because we played, you know, Michigan State, Notre Dame, we played in cold weather our whole career.
Well, no doubt they dodged a bullet in terms of the weather, but I was one of those that got held up the day after the Super Bowl as I got snowed in. Let's take another phone call. Let's go out to Doug, who's joined us on the program.
Doug,
thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to ask you about the, you know, the NFL's their precautions for, you know, concussions, their measures they're taking to stop concussions from an offensive lineman point of view. Because I don't know, I'm just going to run this by you and see if you agree. You know, it's window dressing, because you're never gonna stop concussions in football if you play football. If you play tackle football, you want to play touch football. Then maybe you could, or flag football, then maybe you could stop concussions. But am I right or am I wrong? On every single play on the offensive line, defensive line, you're getting hit. You're leading with your head, and you're getting. Now, I realize it doesn't have the same speed impact, but those are big guys, and it's every play. It's not just intermittently. And so they're not, and nobody ever talks about that. So what's your take on that?
You know what? I think you have to, first of all, understand and accept what the abuse that an offensive line, defensive line, the position is going to contribute. I was always more concerned about the impact on my neck than I was my forehead, because I felt I used my face mask and my hands. If I was throwing my hands into the body of the defensive lineman, and then I was just using my head, my face mask, as the third part of a stabilizing impact, and it was coming more from my hands and my legs, it wasn't that drastic. It was more of doing individual preparation drills at training camp. It was a drill called Nutcracker, where you'd go one-on-one against Steve McMichael or William Perry or Mike Singletary, where, yeah, that was the challenge of abuse. But again, Doug, you got to be naive if you don't think there's going to be a little bit of lingering effects from beating your face into the ground your whole life. And again, I don't think I've suffered thousands of concussions because I was an offensive lineman. You try to use your equipment to take some of that impact away.
Well, thanks for the phone call, Doug.
Yes, Doug.
Well, so much new legislation, you know, administered and passed in the National Football League. The owners' meetings will be upcoming in March, and there'll be even more legislation in terms of, obviously, we know about there's going to be a strike zone.
You know, Jim, every week that we've had a call about the concussion, and I'm glad there is, because we're becoming more educated about it, and it's going to transfer to every sport. But again, you can't, you know, have that as an escape. You can't say, oh, I got bumped in the head, I have a concussion, I got to go home, I can't go to school, I can't play sports anymore. I think that is the weeding out process of sports. Some guys are willing to smash their thumb and stay in. Some guys will smash their thumb and go look for a trainer. And that's always going to be the process of sports, whether you're playing football or any other sport out there.
Well, the leading sport that creates the most concussions is soccer. believe it or not. Soccer, more concussions come from soccer. But you bring up, obviously, new information about concussions. There's a whole new protocol how to deal with concussions from the sideline, the neurologists that are down there. Obviously, the baseline testing at the combine and the protocol that's transferred to the National Football League. And, of course, the less head-to-head trauma. I mean, look how players are practicing today. And that leads me to this point. How encouraging was it? Because I'm a traditionalist when it comes to pro football. I mean, I kind of loved it being the last frontier where men can be men and you're rough and tough out there. And what was encouraging about Super Bowl 48? Seattle brought an intimidating style of football, a hard-hitting style of football, all within the rules. There was no helmet-to-helmet or anything like that in terms of the new legislation in the National Football League, Tom.
I'm glad you brought that up because that did surprise me with the ferociousness of the delivery of a lot of the hits by the Seattle defense. There, guys weren't being carted off the field right and left. And, again, it's that mental frame of mind that you have that you're committed to that game and, you know, things like that aren't going to take you away from it. Hey, great calls today, too, by everybody out there, Jim.
Great calls. We will decide who gets the Sports Authority gift certificate as the program moves along. He's Tom Thayer. I'm Jim Miller. This is the Bears All Access brought to you by Sports Authority on 670 The Score and the Chicago Bears Network. Hey, everyone. Register today at priceless.com/Chicago for MasterCard's Priceless Chicago, a collection of amazing experiences available exclusively to MasterCard cardholders. And welcome back to Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority. I'm Jim Miller, filling in for Zach Zaidman, alongside my co-host, Tom Thayer. Well, there's a lot of news around the National Football League, and we'll save the business season for our final segment, Tom. But, hey, the NFL announced Thursday night football broadcasts. They were secured by CBS for the first 8 weeks of the season. You know, do you like Thursday night football? What do you believe, Tom, are the pros and cons for the players, organizations, and the fans?
You know, I like Thursday night football because I always felt that the week leading up to a Thursday night game, you're not going to practice in pads. So you're going to have some recovery time because you're not going to go through the heavy-duty inside run and the one-on-ones and the things that really abuse your body during the practice week. And then you go out and play on Thursday. And, again, there's good times and bad times attached to every wins and loss. If you win the game, it seems like you got a little mini vacation there before you start your preparation for the next week. And coaches are really wise now, being able to use that time off after that Thursday night game to allow the players to get away from the game for 3 or 4 days. Start up on Monday, off Tuesday, and then into your normal work week. I always liked it, Jim, because I thought it would just it was a difference in the flow of the monotony of a season. You know, players are different about it nowadays, but I enjoyed it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I view it, there are pros and cons, because I think the game plans in terms of the product on the field, at times I feel it's minimized or the product is not as good because the game plans aren't as in-depth. Say if you play on a Sunday, boom, you come in on a Sunday, you're probably getting the plays, you're only doing a walkthrough, and then if it's an away game for you on a Thursday night, then you're on a plane on Wednesday, and you're already getting suited up on Thursday for a game. So I think from that standpoint, I don't like it from a fan perspective. But in terms of the goal of Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, for fans to see more games, because we know when it was broadcast on the NFL Network, all the contracts with Comcast and Time Warner, not as many households were able to see the games. So I'm glad at least now it'll be opened up to more fans to watch football on Thursday night.
Me too, because, you know, my mom and dad are 84 and 82, and they don't have the NFL Network, but they're huge football fans, and they didn't have the opportunity to see that game. So I do think it's a good thing to put those on TV where, you know, a group of people that don't have access to the NFL Network are going to have access to NFL football. So again, I agree with it. I think it's a good thing. But I do agree with you that sometimes the game plans are a little, for lack of a better word, dumbed down a little bit because of if you have a team that doesn't have great experience together, you can't go and put a bunch of new information in that 2.5-day preparation period. Just like you don't expect a lot of fake plays, onside kicks, or something that's going to catch you off guard because it's almost like you got to work 1 week right into the next. And hopefully if you can keep some things that are attachable from 1 week to the next in the game plan, it helps your whole group.
Yeah, there's no doubt. There has to be a little bit of carryover, if not a lot of carryover from the week before if you're playing on the Thursday. But I got to hand it to you, Tom. The back end of a Thursday night game, if you're a player, are you kidding me? That's like an extra bye week.
I know. You know, one of the texts we got from the callers is say, someone said, so Thayer is pulling a toughness card in concussions. That is weak. I know I'm not. I'm saying every person that pursues sports for a living is there are going to be challenged in their commitment to the game if they do have something that's uncomfortable to them. But I think the progress in constantly evaluating information that they're learning about concussions is going to help sports, is going to help all sports. So, again, I'm not saying be tougher than your concussion because that's silly. I'm just saying that I wasn't challenged with those throughout my career. And now the medical technology they have in evaluating is a lot better. So, again, I'm not trying to say be tougher than the sport. No way.
Yeah, well, that brings up a good question. I mean, can your body recover for a Thursday night game after a Sunday game? Cold tubbing, hot tubbing, all those things. And, you know, I would think a lot of players, their bodies are just coming around. And that's another thing that leads me to the product on the field. Maybe a player who sprained his ankle on a Sunday maybe can't go on a Thursday, but may be able to play the following Sunday, if you get my drift. Obviously, the major injuries, they're not going to be able to go. But if you tweak something on a Thursday, you might not be able to be active for your team. But
you know, I kind of look at the NFL as a land of opportunity, because how much notification did you have before you went in and played your first NFL play? Was it, man, that guy got hurt, you're in?
That's right.
Again, that's why the backups, that's why the guys are sitting on the edge of the bench. They're living on the edge, because when that opportunity presents itself, I don't want players to get hurt, but if someone has to step up to the plate and perform on a Thursday night because someone's less than 100%, that's the opportunity they started playing Pop Warner football for.
Well, that's a great point, because it really alludes to the depth of the roster. And again, where you at the Seattle Seahawks and look at the depth of the roster in terms of the back end, backups who've had to play. I mean, I mentioned there's a seventh-round pick, Malcolm Smith, who's the Super Bowl MVP. He was only playing due to the injury of another linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks. Lo and behold, last 4 weeks of the season, that guy's roughshod on everybody. Four interceptions in five games when you look at Malcolm.
You know, you look at the pressure Seattle puts on the quarterback, the ability of the cornerbacks, and the distance that they're going to throw passes to safely get him out of the hand in the cornerback. Those linebackers are in perfect position.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We've got plenty more to come here on Bears All Access. Want to turn our sights to the business season for the Chicago Bears. So he's Tom Thayer. I'm Jim Miller. Thanks for listening to the Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority on 670, The Score, and the Chicago Bears Network. Stick with us. More to come. The Chicago Bears Network presents Inside the Bears, a unique TV show starring Anthony Adams and Lindsay Petrone, brought to you by Jimmy John's, and airing every Sunday night at 10:35 p.m. on Fox Chicago, or go to chicagobears.com/insidethebears. Welcome back to Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority. I'm Jim Miller, filling in for Zach Zaidman, alongside my buddy Tom Thayer. Well, Tom, as we know, this is the business season. It officially started for some teams at really the end of December, as they were knocked out of the playoffs. They already start to turn the page towards the 2014 season. Player evaluations, obviously draft prospects, pro personnel, free agency, you know, building the offseason calendar. It never stops. It's 365, 24/7. You got salary cap issues, and it could go on and on and on. Maybe start, as you do such great work for the Bears Radio Network with Jeff Joniak, calling the games and your experience in the offseason and where the Chicago Bears front office needs to turn their focus to.
You know, it seems like it never stopped, because right out of the box, they came out with Jay Cutler, Matt Slauson, Tim Jennings, and the rest of the guys, and really, I think, shocked the football, you know, pandemonium around the country at the conclusion of the season, before the playoffs and all that. The Bears really got the ball rolling, because at least next year, offensively, they're going to hit the ground running. This is going to be an offense that's going to be able to pick up exactly where they left off at the last offensive play in the Green Bay game. And that, with that being said, that's a big thing. But now I think this is going to be one of the more difficult years for scouts and GMs, because I hear of this is a draft that's four or five rounds deep with quality players. So if you're a Bears football team that's gonna be young on defense, you're gonna have to bring in some talent not only for development, but that are going to be able to have some starting positions and maintain it for the future. So I think the Bears are very lucky that they have a draft that is so deep when they need some defensive players. But then again, you have to understand the scouts have to do their work. It's not about just passing the eye test and that you look the part. You got to make sure that you go down, and if you think this cornerback is really big, that he has the ability to play or whatever position you're looking at, because I'm just saying big cornerbacks are in the vogue now because of Seattle.
No, it's really a great point. I agree with you that the Bears hit the ground running. When you look at Phil Emery locking up Jay Cutler and obviously Robbie Gould and the contracts he extended to those players, but also in terms of getting younger. Again, the model is Seattle. They're the youngest team in the National Football League. And it was interesting that you brought up about the tall, rangy corners. I just got back from the Senior Bowl, and former NFL general manager Phil Savage was down there. He's the executive director of the Senior Bowl. They wanted to make it a mini Legion of Boom. They had safeties playing corner just to take guys out of their comfort zone, because literally, he said, that's what every team in the National Football League wanted to see, Tom.
That's the way it's going to go, Jim, because everybody wants to assume that there's more of these guys out there. But are they out there? Are you going to find these Chancellors and the Shermans and stuff that are bigger than the package that they come in? I mean that facetiously, because we always have an understanding what size safeties are going to be, what size corners are going to be, but they definitely broke the mold with these guys. In maybe it's good that at a younger opportunity in the Senior Bowl and the Combine and stuff, they can have an opportunity to go out to experience with their own abilities, because maybe they can create that corner out of a safety in the way that players are used here with slot receivers, five wideouts, and everything else.
Yeah, well, we'll come back. 102 underclassmen declared for the draft. That's why it is so deep here in 2014.
You know, Jim, I think they should make every underclassman that declares play in the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, I agree, and Phil Savage is trying to get there. We'll come back, try and diagnose some of those positions for the Bears. This is Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority on 670 The Score and the Chicago Bears Network. I just gotta get you out the cage. Welcome back to Bears All Access, brought to you by Sports Authority. I'm Jim Miller, filling in for Zach Zaidman alongside Tom Thayer. It's our final segment of the show. First off, we'd like to give a shout-out to Joe. He is the winner of our Ask Tom segment. A Sports Authority gift certificate is on your way, sir. So thanks for calling in, and to all the callers who called in and asked the great questions previously on the show. Well, Tom, the last segment, really want to get in your head about the direction of the defense. I think a lot of Bears fans out there are a little unsettled, the direction of the defense. Mel Tucker, obviously, is back as a defensive coordinator. Is this a clean canvas? I mean, the style of defense that's going to be built, will it be a continuation of Lovie Smith's Tampa 2? What do you envision from the Chicago Bears and what they potentially may target this offseason?
You know, you get the right personnel. I don't think any defense is stationary. I don't think he can be an exact. We're only going to be a four-man line. We're only going to be a three-man line, whatever the case is. I think you have to have fronts that morph along with the opponent you're playing. And you have to have better play out of each position out there. I don't think you can come back with the same group of people and have them play their style of football. You have to have better, more ferocious, intelligent play out of the safeties. You have to have Jonathan Bostic make sure that he uses his athleticism and his speed and all of his qualities to be a better linebacker. The defensive line has to put pressure on the quarterback. They have to be able to stop the running game to try to make some of the opponents one-dimensional that don't have great experience. And again, I don't think Mel Tucker is to blame. I think you need to have better performances out of a guy like Julius Peppers, according to the money he is making. You have to make sure you don't have the injuries on the inside to Henry Melton and Nate Collins and the rest of these guys, even Stephen Paya throughout time. So again, I do think Mel Tucker can be the guy. It's going to be about making sure you get this young, enthusiastic personnel in here that can kind of capitalize on each other. And That's going to be the key ingredient, is make sure you bring in the personnel here and allow Mel Tucker to have his footprint on a on this group of guys.
No, I agree with you. I think he's going to add his certain flair and his nuances to the defense. And in terms of, say, conversion of players, already Phil Emery talked about Shea McClellan, his hand in the dirt. Most likely he may be standing up playing outside linebacker for the Chicago Bears. Maybe just talk about the conversion. The talent's there. You can see the talent from Shea McClellan.
Right. The talent and the determination is there. And I don't want to give up on a player. I want to go out there and exhaust every opportunity he has for him to show me that he's not willing to be the player that we expect he can be. Because when you go out there and you watch him in training camp, he has instincts. He has the understanding of how to play football. But now he's got to be able to rely on the experiences he's going through to turn him into a faster-thinking, more intelligent player to use his athleticism.
And I'm all for building through the draft, getting younger on the defensive side of the ball. So happy you could join us today on Bears All Access. For Tom Thayer, I'm Jim Miller. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for listening to this Chicago Bears Network presentation of Bears All Access, your all-access pass into the world of Bears football. You can listen to Bears All Access shows online at chicagobears.com. Bears All Access is brought to you by Sports Authority and sponsored by Miller Lite, Verizon, and United Airlines.